Hello and welcome to the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm Tim Nash, a beekeeper always wanting to learn more and also the man behind the Paddock Bees account on Instagram. This is a podcast for those who've fallen into the beekeeping trap and want to learn a little bit more from the beekeeping community. Each week, we'll mix up the guests and provide some insights into the world of beekeeping. So sit tight and we'll soon make a start. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Matthew from Holt Hall Apiary. For those who subscribe to Beecraft, you'll be familiar with his columns there. Matthew is a bee farmer based in Tamworth and has been growing his colonies over the last few years. I'm looking forward to hearing about his journey and future plans, so let's get started. Matthew, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here talking to you.
As per all of the other episodes, let's go back to the beginning. When did you start beekeeping and what got you initially interested in keeping bees?
It's a great question, one that I get asked quite a bit, but I'm not always, can't always give an exact answer. But I started beekeeping around my 21st birthday, just before, so it was about four years ago. Why I started bees is a good question. I've always been quite interested in bees. I can remember having a go at the Royal Agricultural Show when I was younger, going into one of those kind of, you see the observation hives, and they'd got sort of a gazebo with mesh sides on where you could get suited up and go and have a go. So I can always remember doing that. And then on our family farm, there were some old disused hives around the back of the farm. I'd never known there to be bees in them. But yeah, around my 21st, I thought, I quite fancy having a go at beekeeping. So I ordered a nuke. So yeah, small hive starter sort of package. And I cleaned up one of the old hives round the back, and with absolutely no experience, I ended up getting one hive. And then somebody local was trying to give away a swarm, so I took that one on as well. That one turned out to be a bit of a mess because the person that was getting rid of the swarm hadn't got the right equipment left over, really, when they hived it. So it was some 14 by 12 frames, some super frames, some brood frames all in one box. So they were a bit of a state. So it was a bit of a trial by fire with that one. And then I was just hooked after that, really.
4 years in, what's your current colony count?
116.
116?
116.
Wow, 4 years, getting up to 116. That's impressive.
Yeah, it took over. As I said, I got a bit obsessed. So actually, while I was 21, I was doing my degree in accounting, doing a placement year in mergers and acquisitions. And by the time I finished uni, I decided, no, I wasn't going down that route. And like everybody else that was feverishly looking for their graduate jobs, I was calmly sat, quite happy that I was going to be a bee farmer with about a year and a half worth of experience. So I'm an all or nothing sort of person.
So from those two colonies you had on the farm 4 years ago, how have you got to 116?
Yeah, so most of it is through splits of my own. I bought some colonies in the second year that I think we probably put about 10 in maybe as nukes, splitting. I bought quite a few queens in to make up more splits. And then last year, for the first time I had 20 packages come in. So that's literally a mesh box full of bees with a queen. And you then shake those bees out into a hive. So it's essentially a swarm in a box. So I had 20 from there. So I bought in about 30 probably, plus some queens. But now I'm all self-sufficient. I do quite a lot of queen rearing. It's one of the parts of the business I really enjoy. So that obviously, that helps with expansion. Just keep splitting. That's the aim of the game.
where would you want to get to, do you reckon? 116 now, what's sustainable for you?
By the end of this season, I'm going for what I would call a small increase. I'm going up to 150 colonies to go into winter next year. I have a feeling it'll probably be more than that, because I always start off saying it's going to be a smaller amount, and then it gets carried away. So 150 is what I'm planning on, and then we'll go from there.
All of those colonies you've got at the moment, what type of hives are they in? Are they in polys, wood? What's your setup?
So all the nukes, so there's about, what is there at the moment, about 35 nukes. They're in poly nukes, Maysmore poly nukes. They're just my preferred style, the ones I get on best with. So all the nukes are in poly boxes. All of the hives are in single nationals, wooden hives. Open mesh floor, they're standard, really. There's nothing to shout about those hives. They're all built. I built all of the hives myself. I don't buy in any equipment other than like poly parts.
Any thoughts to go for poly nationals, or are you staying on the wooden nationals because you can make all of that?
At the moment, staying on the wooden nationals. Yeah, you've got the cost element, particularly with the level at which I'm expanding, have been expanding over the last couple of years. In like a wooden brood box, it can make for probably £5, whereas I'd probably be looking at £20 to buy in the poly equivalent. I don't doubt that the poly is potentially better. I definitely prefer the nukes in poly boxes. I definitely think they come through winter better. But the wooden ones do the job for now, and whether or not it's we keep using that for another few years and then start a sort of phased changeover. But at the moment, I've got no plans to change at the minute.
What do you enjoy most about beekeeping?
Well, that's a good question. Possibly the problem solving. You know, you're never sure what you're going to find when you open up the hives. Yeah, you've got a pretty good idea. But you're never quite sure, and it's thinking on your feet. It's thinking what can you do? How can you fix this problem? Where can you get brood from to pull this hive up? Or you know, where can you produce a new queen or everything like that? So I think it's just the fact that you never quite know what to expect. You know, when you set out in the morning, so I tend to spend a couple of days a week just on inspections. So you know, you set off in the morning and you're not really sure exactly what you're going to find as the day goes on, which I enjoy. I enjoy being out and about in the countryside. So I was brought up on a family farm, so I've always been used to being outdoors and enjoying working outdoors. So there's a lot I enjoy about beekeeping, but being outside and just thinking on your feet and giving you a chance to work things out.
Yeah, definitely challenges there. I had that when I was doing an inspection the other day. I've got one colony that's just absolutely chock-a-block, kind of side to side in the brood box, and the queen's just been going for it and charged queen cells already. And I was like, okay, you're doing this already. And knowing the weather was taking a turn, I was like, well, what do I do? The problem solving is, do I go for managing that now, or do I go on the basis that, you know what, hopefully the weather might stall whatever plans they've got? But yeah, you can go into an inspection thinking, oh, this is going to be fine, this is how it's going to pan out, then before you know it, it's okay, let me go back and get this bit of equipment, that bit of equipment, and that, and think this through, because yeah, time's not on my side. I need to close this colony up again, but equally deal with what I see.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely learned to keep spares of everything on the back of the pickup when I'm going out, because you can always guarantee you'll need something you haven't got. So I try to carry as much with me as I can to be able to fix as many problems. I can always come up with small solutions, sort of, don't want to say a bodge job, but you know, you can make little things to gain yourself a little bit of time here and there, particularly because usually I'd be going out, you know, I'd spend the whole day going around hives, different sites. So I haven't always got time to deal with it there and then. I haven't got the piece of equipment. And I know that I probably, if I don't do it then, it's probably going to be at least a day, if not 2 days, before I'm back there. So, yeah, you definitely learn different tricks that you need or different bits of kit to carry?
Some listeners might not totally appreciate that. The beekeepers, actually, it's not a case of opening up a hive and just having a look and putting the lid back on. Actually, there's always a lot of manipulations. You're looking for things and you're looking to see whether actually you need to take action to stop a swarm or, like you said, to balance out a few colonies because they're not looking as strong mm-hmm. as they should be. And there's plenty more to beekeeping than just having the hive in your garden thinking, oh, they're absolutely fine. And those are just some of the things that beekeepers might go into an inspection having to
think definitely
about.
There's always things on the back of your mind, and particularly so when I'm going through, we tend to have 16 to 20 hives on a site, and as you're going through, you're sort of keeping a note of what you're looking at in that hive, but also the hives you've already done there. Are they looking as strong as the ones you're going through now? Not as strong. So you're also thinking about how they compare to other hives, as well as the one you're working on, because that's, I find, one of the ways to see if there's an issue, is the comparison between what else is going on around them.
That comes back to some of the advice a few other guests have said, which is, if you are starting out, don't just get the one colony, make sure you get the two, because it's so beneficial to understand what's happening. If you have the one colony, you don't know what's normal. Even with two, you don't know what's normal. Is one doing too much or too little? But at least you've got that comparison. Whereas, one, you're always going to be guessing and just doubting.
Yeah, exactly. You're not sure. It's always good to have an idea of where your average is, even if you've only got two hives. It's good to be able to see the differences, and of course a lot of problems within the hives can be solved with pulling brood from another one, or swapping them over in position and things like that, just to help even them up or pull brood across if you've lost a queen somewhere. All issues that if you'd only got one hive you wouldn't be able to deal with, and are fairly simple fixes if you've got that second hive set up ready.
You enjoy the problem solving, but what do you dislike about beekeeping?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say probably the winter. So obviously I'm beekeeping full time, so that means the winter for me is solely about getting ready for the next season, and generally speaking, jarring honey. We're quite lucky that our jarring facility is quite good, and we do quite a bit of contract jarring for others, but that also means it's not my favorite job. Like I say, I like being outside and working on the bees, so to be stuck inside jarring honey or stuck in the workshop building boxes or lids or whatever, it's got to be the inside jobs.
The jarring facility looks quite impressive. Obviously there's been some evolution in that in the last few years. If there are local beekeepers wanting some help, can they come to you and use your facility or send their honey
exactly.
to you?
That's the idea. So we used to do where you could come along and rent the facility. We have stopped doing that this year just because we've expanded the equipment quite considerably, and it's not really feasible to hire it out now. But we do a service where you can drop your supers off. We can run them through our kit and either deliver it back to you in buckets or jars, however you want. Or if you want to extract at home and you just want it going into jars, then you can drop the buckets off with us, and we can process it through to jars for you, which has been quite popular over the last 12 months, really.
I'm not surprised, because I talked to a number of beekeepers and they say their least favourite job is extraction. So if you are offering a service, I'm not surprised there's a number of beekeepers taking you up on that.
Yeah, it's when I started out, I can remember kind of leaning over the little four-frame extractor that you're trying to spin, but you've not balanced it, so it's bouncing all over the floor and, everything ends up sticky and the kitchen ends up sticky. And so obviously, with our new facility, you can hose it down, it's all food grade. You don't have to worry about the mess. That's the main selling point for most beekeepers to come to us, is the fact that they get their supers back empty, a bucket of honey, and they've got no cleaning up to do.
It's a good thing Mrs. Nash doesn't listen to the podcast. I think she'd be sending me with my marching orders over to that facility. She knew about that.
Yes. Well, I'm at home and with my parents, and my mum wouldn't be very happy if I was still doing it in the kitchen, I can assure you.
Over the 4 years, what's been your best beekeeping story or experience?
The experience, hands down, has to be my time in Australia last year. So I went out to work on a bee farm in October 2019 through until March 2020. So I spent about 5 and 6 months working on a bee farm in Australia. And that's definitely got to be my best beekeeping experience.
I put that down to come to before thinking about last season over here. But that time in Australia then, what was the best thing that you learned? What have you taken from that experience and now integrate into your beekeeping back in the UK?
So I think it was just managing scale, really. So there was five of us, and we were looking after about 2,500 hives. So the scale was just something I just wouldn't have access to be able to work on in this country very easily. The beekeeping is very different there. Obviously, the climate and kind of the swarm tendencies I found with different crops there was very different to here. And so the management styles differed, but it was lots of kind of getting to know, like, as we've said, sort of balancing hives out. Before then, I wasn't always too sure on it, but, you know, always slightly worried about moving brood over or moving a frame of bees or shaking bees into another hive. But over there, it became kind of second nature that we were quite regularly moving bees, brood. We'd move a whole hive and swap it with the site of a weaker hive if we needed to sort of bleed the bees off the stronger one into the weaker one. All things that I didn't really particularly think about doing before, but now I would do them quite regularly here. Obviously, to do that, you want to be quite cautious on your disease control before you're moving brood and bees around. That was another thing over there that I became very sort of used to. There's an awful lot of European fowl brood in the stock there, and quite a relatively large amount of American fowl brood. So I got hands-on experience with fowl brood, identifying it. So, I mean, I've probably seen it now more than our local bee inspectors, because we'd be seeing it, you know, most days, really. The other thing, of course, to see those small hive beetle, which has become quite a talking point over the last few months in the UK. So, yeah, I think it's just the hands-on experience for scale and disease recognition probably would be the most important factors for me.
Balancing hives, obviously, we're taking some bees from one colony, transferring them into another colony. Obviously, a lot of literature would say that you can't just mix the two bees together. You mix bees from three colonies and it's fine because the smell is so intermingled that it won't be an issue there. Is it purely a case of shaking a frame of bees from one colony into another and that's absolutely fine? For those people thinking about heading into, well, winter, spring, when the snow stops, trying to balance up some of their hives, what advice would you
definitely
give them?
I don't know what the best way to put it. It's not as bad as what people would say. I've never had an issue with it. I think you can move bees and brood across without any issue. We certainly did in Australia. Like I say, I would move one hive completely to replace another one, so that all the flying bees went back to the weaker hive, and you'll very rarely find any issue. I know there's a beekeeper up in Scotland who will unite colonies with no newspaper or anything, without even pulling one queen out. They'll just put the two hives together and they'll sort themselves out. Yeah, I think beekeepers are generally, it sounds bad to say, but quite overcautious. You can do a lot more than what the books necessarily say you can do, which is something I've learned through. I'm a sort of have a go at sort of beekeeper, so I'll try something different. Or, you know, in Australia, we try different practices. things that would probably not necessarily be taught here, but that work absolutely fine. And that's what I like is coming up with new procedures for things.
It's good to give people some reassurance, because you're going to be much better to try and bolster a weaker colony, as long as it's not failing for disease and whatever else, rather than just letting it die out if it's not really got going. So it's interesting to hear, and again, just first-hand experience rather than reading some of these books and understanding what people are doing and what's working for them. I don't think
definitely that's why I say I always like having a try, really. I'll always have a go at something first. You know, it might not be the books might say you can't do it or shouldn't do it, or you know, or something like that, but generally speaking, I find that quite a few of the books are relatively outdated or not necessarily accurate in many cases, and you're always worth having a go. Just moving a few bees from one hive to the other won't hurt. If you're worried about that, if you shake bees out in front of the entrance of the other hive, generally speaking, they'll crawl their way into the hive you're trying to put them in anyway, or the younger bees will, and they'll generally be more well accepted. So you can always just, as you're going through, so long as you've seen the queen in that stronger colony and you know she's not on the frame that you're about to shake, just shake it in front of the hive that's a bit weaker, and you'll see them crawling in quite quickly. So that can be a quick way of just balancing up, you know, on the fly, really. You know, so when I'm going through those 20 hives or whatever in the site, like I said, if I've keep remembering what I've had in the past, so I might remember there was a hive on that pallet that was weak. As if I'm going through, you know, the next few and I find one that's a bit too strong, I can always just go and just shake it back at the entrance of that first hive. No need to open it back up again, and that'll just help a little bit.
Really useful advice there. What's been your funniest story?
That's a good question. While I was in Australia, actually, my parents decided, well, they were coming over to Australia for a holiday, and they had wanted to for years, so they made it coincide with while I was there. I was due to catch the train up to Brisbane to see them when they landed, so I'd be there at the airport when they landed. And that morning I was I think I was catching queens or something for queen rearing, and for the first time I got stung right on the face, and I thought, oh, this is it, I'm going to swell up and I'm going to look awful when they arrive. Luckily, it didn't come up too badly.
I sympathise with that. I had an ear like Dumbo last week. I just went round to have a look at them and got stung on the ear. And yeah, for anyone who's seen Hitch, it was going that way, but no, it wasn't too bad in the end.
It can definitely, you can have some interesting reactions sometimes.
So when you got back from Australia last year, how was that UK season for you?
It was a very good spring. The bees were really strong. They came out of winter nicely into what was a very warm spring, which was fantastic. The June gap didn't really exist for us here, so it was looking really good for a really good season. And then, as I'm sure most will have found, it went cold and wet coming into July, August, September, which kind of hampered the crop from the summer. So it was a bit of a shame, a bit of a letdown at the end of the season. But all in all, it was quite good. I managed to get quite a lot of queen rearing done, which is part of the business I really enjoy doing. So that was the first year I'd really done a large quantity of queens, and it gave me a kind of platform to build off again this year. So it ended up being a good season. I made the progress that I wanted to. And yeah, I implemented a lot of the practices I picked up in Australia with my own bees.
So we know that you want to end up with 150 colonies by the end of the 2021 season. What else has this season got
queen
in store
rearing
for you?
As I mentioned a few times, that's part that really interests me. So I'm trying to do quite a lot of queen rearing. So there's 90 mini nukes ready to go. They just need bees in them. I think the first lot of grafting will be in the next couple of weeks, weather dependent. It's looking like it's starting to warm up towards the middle of April, so hopefully we'll get them done then. So yeah, queen rearing is the big one for the year, and then just honey crop making less of an increase this year, so trying to hold back some splits and recombine just to try and get the honey flow, get the honey crop improved this year. Hopefully the weather is on our side for it.
With the queen rearing, why would someone want to buy in a new queen?
A quality of stock, I would say. You know, you hear a lot about buying local stock. I'm not really convinced about the argument to that. They say it's to suit your local climate and everything like that. But I mean, ours has gone from 21 degrees to -3 in about 3 or 4 days. So which climate are the bees that we're breeding used to? You know, our temperature in the UK and climate is so changeable that most of, particularly towards Eastern Europe, Southeastern Europe, the bees are well suited. You know, you can get buckfasting from Denmark if you want them that are used to a cooler temperature. And it's the quality of the stock. You know, it's like any livestock. You wouldn't, what we're breeding from here by calling it local stock is essentially just mongrels. You know, it's a bit of this and a bit of that. If you're buying them in, you can, you know where the stock come from. It's come from a breeding program that they'll have all the records on of those queens, sort of the lines, the lineage of the queens. They've been selected for a particular reason. So I think it just, you know, kind of the quality of the queen is likely to be better than one that you've raised yourself through a swarm instinct or something like that. So I would never replace a queen from with a queen that they've produced themselves, or very rarely. I'd probably let them raise that queen if I'd got a shortage of queens, but then I'd always replace with one that I bred through the breeding program, because I can control sort of the lineage, and that obviously then impacts the drones that are going to be around the mating area. So I think that's why you'd be buying them in. Also, of course, convenience for a lot of people. Like I said, to breed good quality queens isn't the easiest. Anybody can produce a queen, but to produce good quality queens, I think is a bit more difficult.
Okay, that's something to think about there. I've got three colonies. One of them is that wall-to-wall one, which is too prolific for me. I'm all right without that. My hives, I'm in town, so I don't need bees that are just going to grow that rapidly. One of them, like I said, is pretty slow, but the other one, they've grown nicely, and that queen's got a nice temperament. So what I wanted to do was to get one of those queens, well, to get some of those queen cells when they're ready to swarm and actually just re-queen the two other colonies. But interesting that your advice, and it's fair, thinking about the lineage a bit more, because at the end of the day, the new queens could just go off and mate with the drones from the prolific colony anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very difficult because in the UK, we just don't have the land space to be able to isolate. The only way to do it really is instrumental insemination, which is well out of the idea for the majority of us. So you're always going to have a certain element of that. Obviously, you're still going to have the benefits of 50% of, you know, if your queen is moved over, then yes, you might mate with drones from that colony, but at least you've pulled in a bit of that. And you can hope to just keep replacing that year on year, you know, keep selecting. Obviously, it's easier to keep selecting when you've got a larger pool to choose from. So that's why I think it's, you know, if you can't do it yourself, maybe with your local group or something, because that obviously expands the amount of hives at which you can select from to try and introduce new blood, really. And new lines that are going to help push forward your stock.
Some of the listeners will be getting into beekeeping this year, or would have tried to get into beekeeping last season, but obviously with COVID wouldn't have had much support. What would your advice be for people looking to get into it this season?
I came into beekeeping not in a very traditional route. I didn't join an association or anything like that. I think it can be mixed, but the Facebook forums are really good to ask questions or even just to read through what other people are putting. YouTube I found really helpful. You need to be careful as to what sort of videos you're watching as to what's standard for the UK, but watching those ones from abroad are really interesting as well sometimes, because you get different ideas and people say don't watch them because we don't do that here. Sometimes there's a valid reason for not doing that here, and sometimes it's just because it's a case of we've always done it this way, we don't want to do it any other way. I think you particularly, in my opinion, need to find that with associations. They teach it one way and it's sort of their way or the highway. And I'm very much, you know, beekeepers have always got different ideas. Everybody does it a bit differently. Try it. Don't be afraid to fail. You know, it happens. Ask questions. If you see something you don't understand, Google it. I'm always looking, even now, you see something or hear about a particular product or disease or something and you're not too sure, be proactive, go out and find out about it. I think, like I say, beekeeping's problem solving, but that's not always when you're in the hive. That can be after you've gone through it, the hive, taking notes and going and learning about it in the evenings. Looking through the Facebook pages or Googling, things like that. So my advice would just be to just keep learning, really. Keep finding new sources of information. Keep asking questions and just keep trying. You know, something might not work. It might not go right, but that's not the be all and end all. Just try again.
We've mentioned the honey harvest a few times, and one of the key questions I like to ask is where and when can people get their hands on some of your honey?
So our honey, we sell it, we do a few farmers markets locally to us, but mainly, the vast majority of ours gets retailed through our website, which is holthallapiary.co.uk. So that's where the majority of our honey will end up.
I was having a look at that earlier and I could see that queens are on there as well. So if people wanted to get queens but don't live locally, are you able to send those out later in the season when they're ready?
The first time I did it, quite a funny look from the lady that was behind the counter at the post office. But yeah, they go out, we send them out special delivery, so they're with you the next day. We can send them with wings clipped or not to your preference, and we'll always send them marked out, marked with the colour for this year.
Thinking ahead to the next couple of weeks, what are your jobs going to be?
It's really the first start of the inspections. So supering is going to be coming up. It's looking like the weather is going to be turning warmer. And most of our hives are out on oilseed rape sites at the moment. So we'll probably go through putting two supers on everything. I've already been through and checked that they're all queen right and fairly even. So yeah, the next job, as soon as we get a bit of warm weather and they're going to be able to start working the oilseed rape, we'll be out putting excluders in, supering, and then a bit of queen rearing as well.
Busy with the oilseed rape then?
Load got moved out last week onto the oilseed rape, which will probably be, after a good couple of warm days, will be pretty much out here. Not quite fully out, but a good 50% out. So we've probably got another month of that left, I'd have thought, depending on the weather. So yeah, keeping an eye on them. They can obviously soon run out of space if you've got a good week of warm weather and a good flow of nectar. We all know what it's like to try and keep up with them.
If you've got them on the oilseed rape fields for a month, how many supers would you expect them to fill on average?
We'll start with two. I always, for oilseed rape, put two on at the start of the season. It all comes down to weather. If the weather comes right, then you can be looking at two or three supers full. They did really well last year, so they were averaging, probably across all the sites, the average was probably two supers full. which I was quite happy with, considering they were fairly varied. Some of them were nukes that had been promoted into full hives, like overwintered nukes. So there were some that weren't quite as strong. So, yeah, two I would hope for, really.
You always hear about the bees being taken to oilseed rape and that there's a lot of nectar, but I've never really thought about how much that actually is.
Yeah,
but
definitely. That's interesting. Worth it. And for me, it's as much about getting that first crop as how much it pushes the bees on. You know, the hives build up so much stronger, they get a massive influx of nectar and pollen. And they're just, you know, they're so much better when they come away from the oilseed rape than when they get there. And the sites that haven't got oilseed rape do tend to be behind those that have, just because, you know, they haven't had that massive influx of pollen.
Matthew, it sounds like you have a very busy season ahead of you. Really excited to hear how you get on with the queen rearing. I might need to reconsider where I am and maybe go onto the website and place an order and see what happens there. But thank you so much for joining this episode.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, everyone, thanks for taking the time to join me today for the Paddock Bees podcast. I really hope you found it useful. I'd love for you to come back and give me some feedback. So head over to Instagram and send me a direct message or email me on paddockbees@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you want to hear about. So please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts. Once again, thanks for joining. See you next time. Bye.